The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey friends, thanks for being with me today. I could not be more excited because I have a Florida football legend on the phone with me, Sammy Smith. Welcome to my program today, Sammy.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. It's such a blessing and such an honor to be able to spend the time that we'll share together here today with you. So again, thank you for having me.
Well, it's my joy to have you visit with us here on the program. Having just met you not too long ago, it's really great to talk to somebody who started off at Florida State and broke all sorts of records while you were there. And from Florida State, you went on to play for the Dolphins, and then from the Dolphins on to the Broncos. And boy, oh boy, what I did not know about you, and we'll talk more about this in a little bit, was that you also had a lot of success on the track field as well.
Yes, track and field was one of my favorite sports. Knew at a very young age that God had blessed me with a lot of speed. As for a young man that was my size, I was a big running back, but I could pick him up and put him down, and I really enjoyed competing at a young age with the older guys that were in my community, and always seeming to be able to outrun them, you know, in the 100-meter sprints and 40-yard dashes. So I knew that God had given me an incredible amount of ability to run. So track and field, again, was one of my favorite pastimes.
Well, I tell you what, you made your mark in football, and it's always amazing to me how many times I've lost track, but it has to be at least five or six NFL players that I've already had on my show, and it is always, to me, very difficult on one hand because I think about the pain that football players have to go through along with the fun. There has to be a good measure of pain. You don't feel that maybe quite the same way in track and field, as that's not quite the contact sport that football is. But when you look back, growing up playing football, did you suffer a lot of injuries when you were a young guy?
Not really so much when I was young. I started having you know, some few little minor knee issues, like in college. I think I had maybe one or two MCL sprains. I had one down in Miami. And unfortunately, that same knee here the last year, last August, actually, I started having some pain in that knee and didn't know where it was coming from. You know, I was just out, you know, exercising and walking and then I started trying to do treatment there at Ole Miss in our training room for about 6 weeks, and it just wouldn't get better. So finally, I went and had an MRI done, and I had a torn meniscus, which I have no idea how I tore it. It's just, I guess, with age and just the wear and tear that over the years that knee had taken, I started to really have some issues with it. But other than just a few regular injuries that you get playing football, I never had any, you know, ACL tears or, you know, nothing major that took me out of the game. Now, I did have a torn groin muscle, which I think a lot of them refer to those today as sports hernias. And, of course, technology has come a long way. But that gave me a lot of problems and really is what knocked me out of the game there playing, you know, in Denver. Mm-hmm. That sort of ended my career just having to have that surgery. But, you know, football comes with its, you know, it's opportunities for injuries, but it also comes with, you know, opportunities for great success and great fun if you enjoy the game.
Well, I tell you what, I love watching the game, and I, in my younger days, enjoyed playing the game, but nothing at the level that I could even begin to comprehend all of what you've done. Sammy, did you grow up knowing anything about the Lord at all, or what was your upbringing like with regards to relationship with God?
I did. I grew up, my church was right across the street from my house, the International House of of Independent House of Prayer was what I attended in Florida as a young kid in Zellwood. I went on Wednesday nights, you know, for the Wednesday night service, Sunday services. My mom and dad made sure that we were there. But what I found out later was that, you know, just going to church and then having a relationship with Christ are two different things.
They are.
It would be later in life that I would encounter Jesus Christ and know what it meant to accept him as my personal Savior and to rely on him and depend wholly on him. I certainly didn't know and didn't understand what that was as a young kid, but life's twists and turns and, you know, navigating through life certainly brought me at a time in my life where I had that encounter, and I'm so thankful for it.
Well, we'll talk more about that and that encounter that you had with the Lord, which was life-changing, coming up in a moment. You did, as I mentioned earlier, played football for Bobby Bowden. Tell us a little bit about your relationship with Coach Bowden.
Well, I met Coach Bowden as an eighth grader. My first time going up to Tallahassee for a Bobby Bowden football camp came when I was in the eighth grade. And, of course, I went back the following year, the next couple of years. I enjoyed going to Tallahassee, enjoyed the coaching staff that was there and the family atmosphere that I felt, you know, at that young age, you know, so knew that when the time came that Florida State was going to be one of the top schools that I consider attending simply because of Coach Bowden and Coach Jim Gladden, Billy Sexton, Chuck Amata, you know, all those guys that were there that were coaching and mentoring and impacting young lives for Christ. And Coach Bowden certainly played a huge role in my decision-making at that time and has continued to play a huge role in my life even until this day. He's one of the most influential men outside of sports and football and the rhetoric that comes with that. He's really been a mentor to me and someone that I've leaned on, you know, for just understanding of things for many, many years, and I still do today.
When you played for Coach Bowden back in that day, that was some of the most exciting times, and you played with some really great players on your team as well. Why don't you share a few memories about some of those?
Well, you know, I can remember going to Florida State after signing with Florida State that we had a ton of guys that came on board and signed, you know, Deion Sanders, Pat Tomlin, Eric Hayes, Odell Hagans, Michael Tanks. I could name so many. And we had the opportunity to play in the first ever Florida-Georgia High School All-Star game. And I think they did that game for a few years after. It was a game that didn't last too long, but we played in the first one. And on that team, man, I believe we had, you know, between players that were on the Florida side and, you know, maybe one or two from the Georgia side that had committed to play at Florida State, we must have had 10, 12 guys that were on that team. So we like to think that the 85 class, which was my class, was the catalyst that helped usher in, you know, what would become, you know, a couple of years later, a dominant football player, football program that would continue to be at the top, you know, in the top four or five schools every year for, you know, 14 years straight. So Deion and myself and those other guys in that class, we like to take credit for turning Florida State into the powerhouse it was back then.
I'm telling you, you played in what has to be considered one of the golden eras of playing for Florida State. And just not only that, in football in general, the 80s were wonderful football years. And boy, what a class to be able to play alongside some of those players like that. And I know that your relationship with Deion is still good to this day, isn't it?
Oh, yes. We actually were just on a Zoom call here probably 5-6 weeks ago with a bunch of guys from that era, you know, from, you know, like 83, 84, all the way up to maybe 90, you know, just a bunch of guys that were on there just catching up, man, and laughing and reminiscing about some of the old times. And, one thing that I say and that has been tremendous for me is just the camaraderie that having played there at Florida State, not only just with the fans that I've known for so many years that, you know, that love and support the school and love and support the players. You know, I still got people that are Florida State alumni that I knew from over 30 years ago that support me in ministry now.
Mm-hmm.
But just the camaraderie, having been a Knoll, you know, we see those texts and stuff all the time from each other, Knolls for life, and that's what we are. And man, it's so great to have been a part of that family and to continue being a part of the family of being a Knoll.
Now, 1989 rolls around, and you had mentioned about thinking about wanting one day to play for Florida State. When you were young, could you ever imagine that you would go as high in the draft for the NFL as you did?
I did. I really believed, again, that God had blessed me with some amazing abilities, and I had a great high school career. Become a USA Today High School All-American and had achieved so much at the high school level in both football and track, you know, being a state champion 100 and 200 meter sprinter. Going into Florida State, I knew that I would have the opportunity, Lord willing, you know, that I could stay healthy and go there and play and have a good career there, that I'd have an opportunity at some point in time to be a high draft pick. And but certainly saw that come true in 1989 when I got the call from Coach Don Shula and the staff there, alerting me that they were going to take me. So it was a dream come true. I didn't grow up as a Dolphin fan. Actually, I really enjoyed the Oakland Raiders. That was the team I grew up kind of watching, and was a huge Marcus Allen fan. You know, I really enjoyed watching him play. And of course, watching Tony Dorsett with the Cowboys. And I was too young to remember, you know, Mercury Morris and those guys, because I was born in 67. And you're talking about 72, early 70s when Zonka and all those guys were playing. So I never got a chance to see them play. So grew up, you know, more watching Oakland Raiders and Dallas Cowboys.
Mm-hmm. But I tell you what, again, you're talking about an era and getting to play for somebody like Shula, who we just recently lost, I guess, not that long ago. But that, again, a golden age in NFL. And it's just like, there you are right in the middle of playing with all these great players. When I went to high school, I am a little bit older than you, so I remember Zonka and those amazing years back in the early 70s, Miami Dolphins, they really had it going on. And it was really tremendous to be able to watch those games and to realize that you're playing for the guy that, even though you may not have been as intricately tied to as what you were Oakland, but that had to be quite an exciting thrill to go play for Shula.
It was a tremendous achievement, and I was so thankful for that opportunity. And then, you know, what was unique about it was the Dolphins had two first-round draft picks that year, and one of my guys that I competed against year in and year out while at Florida State was Lewis Oliver, and he was the other first-round draft pick that the Dolphins took that year. And of course, you know, we were great friends and excited about going down there and competing together, you know, as opposed to competing against each other as we had done for, you know, the years in college. And then Jarvis Williams was down there, who played at Florida, Lorenzo Hampton, who played at Florida. So I didn't have any Seminoles down there with me, but I was on a team that had a few Gators and one or two Miami Hurricanes.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, we came together, man, and it was an exciting time. Again, just being able to play for a legendary coach like Coach Shula, playing alongside Dan Marino, Mark Clayton, Mark Duper, Jim Jensen, John Offerdahl, just all the great players that played down there during that era, man. It was truly, truly an amazing honor.
Well, I tell you what, it's an honor for me to get to talk to you, because I've got great friends that would be just loving to be in my shoes right now, getting to talk to you. And even the names that you've rolled off in just this last few seconds would be names of people that they're going like, oh, come on, man. I can't believe you're getting to talk to Sammy Smith. So it's really exciting. And Phil Corson, if you're listening right now, I have to say it. Sorry, buddy. Eat your heart out. It's just not your day. But it's great getting to talk to Sammy Smith today on my program. Sammy's years went from Miami on over to the Broncos, and then some unexpected turns for him, and we're going to talk about some of those. But those turns have turned out to be some of the most formative in his life and in his ministry. And we're going to continue our discussion with Sammy Smith coming up in a moment right here on The Shepherd. On the line today with Sammy Smith, and we talked in segment one, if you've just joined in, segment one was talking about his career up until and through the years at Miami, and boy, what years those were, playing for Florida State and for Coach Bowden alongside Deion Sanders and just a ton of other names that he's mentioned. And oh, it is just wonderful to have Sammy Smith on the phone. Sammy, what was it like then to make a transition? You always hear this expression in the NFL or the NBA or any pro sports, it's all about business. And that's kind of an expression that they will use when a player is traded, and you were traded. You made the move from there over to the Broncos. What was that transition like for you?
Well, I mean, it came at a time when I had some difficulty there in Miami. Things didn't go as I had planned. And, you know, one of the things I've learned, you know, just by living life and being on this journey that we call life, is that things aren't cookie cutter. You know, we can't just always, you know, navigate and plan things the way that we want them to work out. It doesn't always happen that way. And so I left Miami at a time where, you know, I was looking for a change and looking for to be reinvigorated and to have another opportunity to do well there, you know, in Denver. And Denver had a running back at the time, Bobby Humphrey, that was having some issues there, and they just thought it would be a good fit to just change. I never forget coming in and sitting in Coach Shula's office prior to us deciding to do that and deciding to make that change. And here's just an opportunity to talk about Coach Shula's character. You know, that he brought me in, and he essentially afforded me the opportunity to sort of be in the middle of making that decision. And that's one of the things I always say I look back and I do, and I did kind of regret that, you know, God had given me an amazing opportunity to be a Miami Dolphin and to be drafted by the Miami Dolphins and to play down there. And I had some difficult times, but I really believe that, and in my heart afterwards, that I should have pushed more to stay down there, finish the course, come back, you know, have a great year the next year, have a great career in Miami playing there. But, you know, at the time, it just seemed like the logical thing to do was to try to move and get a fresh start. And I did regret that, but he gave me the opportunity and asked me my thoughts on it. And I believe had I talked to him and said, hey, I want to stay here, I want to fight through this, that would have been considered, and he may have allowed me to do that. But moving forward and having the opportunity to go to Denver was certainly something that I welcomed and had hoped that I would go there and get off to a good start. But unfortunately, I had a really bad injury during the off season there during training, and never really got my career off to a good start there.
Now, was any impact at all to that, the fact that the elevation and just the playing conditions so different in Colorado from Florida?
No, it didn't have anything to do with that. It was, we were doing some different drills and exercises that I had not done, and really was just learning how to do those exercises, and just didn't perform one right, and I ended up tearing my groin muscle, you know, really bad. I tore it basically off of my pelvis, and it took them quite a bit of time to assess really what was going on there. They thought I just had a pulled groin, and, you know, I've had those before, you know, in high school running track and stuff, and this thing just wouldn't heal. Just was aggravating. And finally, when I went and got another opinion, they told me that I had a really bad, I needed to have surgery, and of course had the surgery and rehabbed, and just didn't get back to myself in the next year or so. Mm-hmm. It would be many years after I had retired and finished that area in my leg started to feel normal again.
From there, once you've left the NFL, tell us a little bit about that transition. Coming out of the NFL, and then again, your life took an unexpected turn at some point. What was that like?
Well, I can say, you know, being a part of sports and being a part of a family of guys that were pursuing something special every year. You know, I had always been a part of that. From as far as I can remember, you know, from middle school and, you know, just playing the sport. And then now all of a sudden the game is gone. Mm-hmm. And you're looking for that family. You're looking for the next thing that is going to drive you and allow you to compete and excel. And I never forget that one of the things my heart was that I wanted to do a lot in my community. I wanted to give back to, you know, folks that couldn't afford things, couldn't afford homes. And I had started a home building business, my wife and I, and we were building homes there in the Zellwood community. And I was holding mortgages for folks that couldn't afford to, you know, their credit wasn't good enough to get mortgages. And mm-hmm. I would help them try to get their credit up. And, you know, with the idea that 2 or 3 years later, they could buy that home from us. So that was my business. And that was something that, you know, we were doing, and it was starting off really good. And I believe that anytime we set out to do something that's going to be positive, that the enemy is lurking at the door, man. He's waiting to find an avenue in to you know, put into disarray everything that God is trying to build. And my disarray came in the form of really just a lifelong friend that had wanted to borrow some money from me, and I lent him the money, and consequently he was dealing in drugs, and he came back and paid me a week later and paid me, you know, a substantial amount more than what I had loaned him. And of course, that's the curiosity comes up. Now I want to know, how did he do that? And found myself a few weeks later involved in lending money to friends that were involved in, you know, drug dealing. And, you know, 10 months later, I would be getting arrested for being a part of a conspiracy. So a federal drug conspiracy. So I allowed the enemy to come in my idle time and just not be in focus, and just totally turned my life upside down at that time. And that certainly weren't the character that was within me. That wasn't how I had been raised. That was not how my mom and dad had navigated me and my brothers through life. And certainly, again, was just a really, really bad choice on my part, and changed my life forever, man. But I also look at it and say, you know, it was a catalyst that sent me down the road that I went down mm-hmm. to get to where I'm at today. And that's strong in the Lord, man, and loving God, and really just basking and enjoying the opportunities that he gives me through those experiences to share that journey, to share how it changed my life, to share how it wrecked my life some, but then also to be able to help young people navigate that they don't make the same decisions.
Now, prior to that, that whole arrest, was it during that time frame prior to that that you and your wife also suffered a personal tragedy?
Well, I lost a son in January of 1990 to SIDS. We had my son right now would have been, I think, 31 years old. He was 2 months old. He went that day and had his 2 month shots. And of course, the doctor gave my wife a glowing report that he was growing and he was healthy and beautiful, beautiful young boy. And that to just keep an eye on him that day, because the medication that they gave would sometimes make the babies drowsy. Mm-hmm. Well, later that night, my baby went to sleep and he never woke up. Oh. And so that was a really challenging time for us. Whirlwind that it took me on, really just questioning God. And that would have been prior to this whole episode that I just mentioned about becoming, you know, part of that drug conspiracy and other things in my life that had happened during that time where I was lost, man, and just didn't have answers and didn't really want to hear any answers from people that were trying to help me and to speak life into me, you know, through the word of God, because I was fractured and I was hurt that God would give me a son and allow me and my wife to have him for 2 months and then take him. So that was a part of the whole spiral and everything that was going on in my life at that time.
You know, these things, and no one who has not gone through the loss of a child really could even begin to understand the pain and the questions that can come up. But it certainly is something that I understand and are having gone through. And in our case, we only were able to keep our son for 9 hours. I can't even imagine what it was like for you and your wife with 2 months. And then, you know, on such a day where you're looking forward, you've had a otherwise good report, and then for that to happen, that is so painful. And it did cause a kind of a lingering sense in your life of that can manifest itself as anger and maybe resentment toward life and maybe even anger toward God. And I think you experienced some of that as well, right?
I did. And I can tell you that it would be many years that later that I was able to really understand that thing and accept it and accept some other things in my life. And it would come in the form of really the night that I got arrested, man. I was able to really do an overview of my life. And I think God had put me in a position where now I could hear him. You know, whereas when I was out and ripping and running and just living life day to day and going through the daily dealings of, you know, being on that journey of life, man, and I may have not been listening, and I didn't want to listen. But God put me in a place where now I had to be still, and he could get my attention. I could really do an overview of the previous 4 or 5 years of my life and see some areas where maybe I had been lacking. And the main area I think that I was lacking was somewhere along the line, man, I just kind of, you know, faltered away from my relationship with God and didn't honor him with the abilities that he had given me, didn't honor him with the financial successes that he had given me, you know, being a first round draft pick, didn't honor him with my marriage and just, you know, all those things that it took sitting in that Orange County jail for me to be able to cry out and say, God, forgive me, you know, forgive me. You know, this if this is what it took for me to come into a relationship with you. And we talked about having that experience earlier. That's where I had my experience at, in that Orange County jail, where I fully surrendered, facing a whole lot of time for being a part of a federal drug conspiracy. But I surrendered all to God in the privacy of a little 6x9 cell after leaving a big old house where, you know, I had, you know, rooms that were huge and I'm sitting in a little cramped cell. But that's where I surrendered all, man. And that's where God came in and immediately touched my life and changed my life forever. And it hadn't been the same since. And, you know, this journey that I've been on has been, I think, beneficial to people that I've had many times over to share my story and to share my journey, share about losing a son. I've been in audiences where I've shared that experience, and I've had people come up to me afterward that maybe had just lost a kid to SIDS. And, you know, just being able to help them navigate through that and let them know that, you know, it's going to be all right, man. And so, you know, I'm thankful for the platform that God gave me through all my what other people would probably look at and say really troubling and and horrible experiences.
It really sounds like the same thing that you're describing is what Cindy and I encountered as well, that it in some ways is very helpful, having lost a child, to be able to talk to somebody else who's just lost one as well. It's actually not only helpful to them, but it does help our own hearts as well. Isn't that what you've experienced yourself?
Exactly. You know, I believe that our country right now, we have a lot of issues. We have a lot of problems. Mm-hmm. But there's a few that I can pinpoint that have impacted my life. You know, I think unforgiveness is something that is so, so detrimental to the person that doesn't forgive. And then I think allowing people to forgive you, you know, for things that maybe they have done, it's so rewarding. I can remember I didn't want to go down and speak in Miami. I had held such pain from my experiences down there that in 2012, FCA down in South Florida had reached out to me about speaking at a FCA breakfast down there for the Orange Bowl. And Florida State was playing Northern Illinois in it. And, man, I struggled with wanting to accept that opportunity. I really didn't want to do it. And God kind of spoke to me and said, how long are you not going to go and do what you've been called to do? Mm-hmm. You know, I've called you to go and to speak, and there's going to be healing when you go there. And I didn't understand what he was saying, but I went there, and in front of probably 1,000 people that morning at that breakfast, a lot of, you know, Miami Dolphin fans, you know, a lot of people that are Seminole fans, I shared, you know, my time down in Miami, how hard it was to hear the chants that day after I had that fumble. I shared about losing my son there. I shared about how difficult it was for me to even want to, you know, set foot down there and share my journey. But I'm being obedient to God. And after I finished, there was a line of people standing in line to come up to give me a hug, and people coming with tears in their eyes that were in the stands that day, you know, that were screaming, "Sammy sucks." Apologizing to me, you know, telling me to please forgive him, which I hadn't forgiven him. But man, you're talking about healing. And then I talked about the couples that would come up and talk about SIDS. I had a couple that came up to me with tears in their eyes. They had just lost a baby. Mm-hmm. And they just wanted to know how was I able to get through that, me and my wife at the time? How were we able to navigate through those times? And so just being able to let them know that you're not alone, and that, man, you know, God will take that thing and use it for his benefit and for the edifying of his kingdom, was so rewarding, man. So people ask me again, I think we talked about this off of the air, is there anything I would change about my life? And absolutely there isn't. Mm. If what I had to go through to get to where I'm at now, with God giving me the opportunity to daily, you know, impact lives, to encourage coaches and athletes to go back to school. I just graduated after being out of school for over 31 years. God instilled in my heart to be an example to the Ole Miss football players and to go back to school and to graduate from college. You know, it's just the little things like that, man. I wouldn't change any of it.
Well, congratulations to you on doing that. That is something that a lot of pro players that don't go all the way to finish and get their degrees, you've done that, and you did it in a wonderful fashion. Congratulations, Sammy, for doing that.
Thank you.
Well, Sammy Smith is my guest today, and I know you've got to run. And you mentioned being at Ole Miss. Tell us real quick about your role there, what you're doing.
Well, I serve as the Director of Character Development, which is the political correct title of my position there. But I'm the chaplain for the football team. I serve in the role of just being able to help the football players and our coaches navigate through their spiritual life and help them grow. You know, those that want to be on that journey. I do the pregame chapels, you know, on Friday nights. My wife and I started a Sunday worship service that we do in our big team meeting room, and we make that available during the football season for coaches and athletes that maybe don't have a church home, that they're going to come and hear a message, and they're going to hear some good fellowship and some worship, and, you know, it's usually an hour-long deal that They're right there in the building. It's right before they have to go to like meetings on Sundays, you know, after a Saturday game. And that we watched that grow from, you know, just a few people our first year there. The man, sometimes last year we would have close to 100 people being in those services. So, and then just being able to do one-on-one mentoring. I think that having the opportunity to go to Ole Miss has really shown me something that's lacking in our society and in our communities today, man. And, you know, as we navigate through all the stuff that's happening, you know, worldwide right now and in mm-hmm. our country,
yes,
is that, man, we're missing out on love. You know, God calls us and he commanded us, right, to love him, you know, love him with all our heart and our mm-hmm. minds, you know, and then to do, you know, the next thing would be to love our neighbors, you know, to love those people that he puts in our sphere of influence, and that doesn't matter what color they are, but to love them. And if you can't do the first thing, then there's no way you're going to be able to do the second. So it starts out with loving God. And, man, I just look at, you know, again, the state that our country is in right now and the fact that I'm an African-American man that's at the University of Mississippi
mm-hmm.
serving in the role that I am as a chaplain on that campus to the football team. Now, you tell me there's not some forgiveness somewhere in that, and that God is not in the midst of that. If you know the history surrounding the University of Mississippi, man, there's some things that are working there. That town of Oxford, man, is on fire for the Lord, and the coaching staff that we have there, man, they're engaging our athletes, you know, all across the athletic staff there. You know, they're engaging this topic, and they're heading, you know, facing it head on, and nobody's, you know, not addressing the elephant in the room. And mm-hmm. it's just amazing that I get to be a part of that and to be, you know, just entrenched in the seeing that change happen there. And that same change can happen in all of our communities if we all will just, you know, be able to navigate, understand each other, have dialogue, listen, talk, understand each other's experiences and, you know, the things that others that have gone through that maybe, you know, that someone else hadn't, you know, and just talk. And if you don't talk about things, then you'll never accomplish anything. But it has to be surrounded in love.
By this shall all men know that we are his disciples, and that is the love of God in our hearts. Sammy, you are a Central Florida treasure on loan to Oxford, Mississippi. But we'll still claim you, man. We still love you. And it's great to be able to talk with you and to have you on my program today.
Anytime, man. I look forward to doing this again sometime soon.
Absolutely. We want you back. Sammy Smith, my guest, and we'll be back in a moment here on The Shepherd on Afternoons with Mike. Don't go away. Back again here on the program. Really enjoyed my chat with Sammy Smith, and I know you enjoyed that as well. What a guy he is. I've got another friend on the phone today with me, and that is our good friend Mark Goldstein. Mark, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Mike. It's always great to just have a chance to chat with you and let a few people listen.
Well, it is always fun, and we, you know, we talk about that. Our program is kind of like a conversation that we just invite other people to join us, and that's really the way I love doing this. And you're such a good friend to not only me but to the program itself. This month, people who know you and have known you for years know that you've been the leader of the Christian Chamber, the Central Florida Christian Chamber. And we talked about several months ago, right in the middle of all of this COVID crisis, we talked about the fact that a transition was happening and that you're going to be turning the keys over to a new leader. How's that transition going?
You know, it's going supernaturally well. It really is. Crystal Parker is going to be an amazing asset. She already is an amazing asset. She's been a member of the chamber for over a year, and now she's going to step up in her role as president. And I'm absolutely thrilled. Next week, or on the 11th? No, whatever day it is. The 9th, 18th.
The 18th.
I'm losing track. I'm getting old, Mike. On the 18th, it will be my swan song. It'll be the last chamber lunch where I'm president. And I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be kind of bittersweet.
Well, it's bittersweet in the fact that you're leaving. One part of the sweetness of this meeting is it's the first in several months that we'll be actually face to face.
Absolutely. And of course, First Baptist and Faith Hall, they're doing everything they need to do to keep us safe. We're doing things also, even to the point where we're having little red dots available to where if somebody doesn't want to be hugged or handshaked, they can put the little dot on their name tag and they'll identify themselves as a no contact person. You know what? By nature, we're huggers. By nature, we want to have contact. But you know, there's going to be a lot of people. This is their first event out and they're doing it to come say hi to me.
Right.
And otherwise they wouldn't have even come. And we just want to extend that courtesy to let folks know they don't have to be uncomfortable or worry about undesired contact or anything that would make them uncomfortable.
And, you know, I think it is important that that be taken into consideration. Not everyone is as comfortable, as you said, as the next person with regard to how this reentry is going to work out. And kind of coming back into face-to-face contact with a lot of people is in itself, for some, very exciting. And others might be finding themselves being a bit apprehensive about it.
Yeah, and as evidence of that, go to any store and you'll see people that have masks, people that don't, people that are still wearing gloves. Everybody has their own comfort zone and how they're working through this. And we all have to be very courteous and considerate of others, regardless of our position on it.
And I'm praying that we all get to that point where everyone is comfortable again, being back together and not having this as something on the forefront of everyone's mind all day long. And I think it is getting better, and we're hoping that that continues on. Now, after the chamber meeting, when we say goodbye to you, you're not leaving the chamber. You're not leaving involvement with Central Florida business in any way. You're transitioning, and just a quick word about what you're going to be doing. You're kind of stepping into an expanded role with CLC, correct?
Right. Christian Leadership Concepts is an organization founded over 35 years ago to minister to men, to create groups of guys who can be transparent, vulnerable, who can lean on each other, have accountability with each other. And, you know, now more than ever, you know, we need godly leaders. We need godly husbands, godly dads, godly employers, employees, citizens. And this is a program that takes small groups and helps men really create a band of brothers. And so I'm going to be pouring into thousands of guys in Central Florida. And so I'm not retiring, I'm redirecting.
And that's good. And I know that part of your role will be working with the Better Man event, which has been obviously rescheduled, was scheduled for last month and now moved to November. And you guys will be the discipleship arm for that event.
Absolutely. And I think they've announced it. If not, I'm spilling the beans. It was going to be at Silver Spurs Arena. It's not.
Oh, I have not heard that. You are spilling the beans.
Okay. Well, they haven't announced where the actual locations, but what they're doing is they're going to get a small venue. They're still going to have all of the same people in the program, but it's going to be live streamed.
Oh, okay.
And churches around the area can sign up to show it in their churches, and everybody, all the guys can attend free.
Hmm. Wow.
So the thing was, it was trying to figure out if they could make the budget work, if they can only put 75% in there. Plus, even in November, how many guys, wives, will let them go to an event with thousands of other guys?
Yeah.
So it isn't a step backward. I see it as a step forward, where at Silver Spurs, they could have had 9,000. Here, they can have 90,000.
Right.
You know, for such a time as this, this is needed. So I think this is lemonade.
Okay. And that's big news. And we'll be watching that as it develops. And churches throughout the area, like you said, even the churches up in Alachua and Marion County that are part of our audience, can now become a kind of like a site for the Better Man event, and through a big screen event such as a projection of the service in their own auditorium, invite their own people.
Let's take it further than that. What about people around the country?
Yeah, all around. That's right.
I mean, it opens it up now to, you know, it's just beyond our imagination where this could actually go.
Well,
God knows.
I'm very excited about it because Lecrae is part of that event.
Yes.
And that's going to be wonderful. Well, we wish you the best with CLC, and thank you for your years of service with the Christian Chamber, and you have just helped that organization in so many ways. And personally, I'm glad I got to come back at a time in which you were still at the helm, and that was, for me, a real treat. But our friendship obviously will go forward, and we'll see how God opens doors for you and CLC. Something else that's very exciting, and that is the fact that you have you've got a book coming out. Tell us about that book and your involvement with Jacqueline Lynn, who's been on this program as well.
Jackie has a series called Conversations, where she interviews individuals, and it's recorded, transcribed, and then it becomes a question-answer publication. And I've been wanting to do a book for a long time. And, you know, like everybody else, life gets in the way. Where do you start and all that? So Jackie approached me about doing that. I said yes. And it was thrilling to do it. And it's really, it really got my heart out on paper. And at this time, it's ideal. It's just coming out at a perfect.
What is that time?
Well, I think it was the first of June. It was available on Amazon. It's going to be at the Chamber lunch next week.
In hard copy?
I'm sorry?
Will you have that in hard copy?
A paperback.
Okay.
It'll be in paperback. But it's called Work is Worship, How Your Labor Becomes Your Legacy. And, you know, it's that whole idea that we have a purpose and a calling, and we need to live in that calling.
Well, that's wonderful, and I congratulate you and Jackie as well. And, boy, that's going to be exciting to see a copy of that when we're all together again next week. And that will be at the Chamber, and we always say thanks to our friends down at First Baptist for hosting that event, and it's going to be wonderful to be back together, first time in several months. For the business people that are part of the Christian business community, all coming together in one place and not doing it virtually. You've become a master. I could call you the Zoom master. You have how many Zoom meetings today only are you a part of?
One, two, four.
Four in one day.
Yeah.
Well, that, my friend, is crazy, but I know you're very busy. And before you go, tell us a little bit about what you're seeing happen in Central Florida businesses as we come out of COVID-19. What's your prognosis? How do you feel things are happening?
I think things are happening at a brisker pace than I thought. When you live in a capitalistic or a society that's founded on capitalism, people want to capitalize. And, you know, I think, honestly, I think a lot of these protests are people just blowing off steam because they haven't been able to do stuff for a while. And maybe their focus is a little off, but, you know, you can understand that. But I think business-wise, I think as long as business owners understand that everybody's going to want to be treated like we talked earlier, based on their comfort zone, I think if that can be respected, I think businesses are going to be back very quickly to what they normally do. I know Disney is opening on the 22nd. It's going to be a lot of rules, stipulation. I think by the 1st of August, cruising is going to start again. Mm. The cruise industry is going to get going. So, I think that there's a lot of businesses that have found ways to do it okay, to keep the bottom line going. And I think businesses have found that in this new normal, they found new ways of doing things that they would have never thought of before. And I think it's benefited them.
Well, you know, those things are going to stay around for most businesses. They'll keep those nuances going forward. Churches are doing that. They're live streaming, and that's going to be part of their every week operation now. So, Mark Goldstein, it's always great having you drop by on the program. Thank you for being with me today.
And it's been great being cleanup to Sammy Smith.
Yeah. Well, that's right. What a guy he is. And he is so much fun. And I enjoyed having him on the program, and you as well. And friends, thank you for dropping by today again. We'll be back next time right here on Afternoons with Mike.